The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. As is often pointed out, I'm from Texas, and somewhere deep in my Texan soul, there's a preacher that just loves this verse from the Psalms. You can imagine how excited I was when it finally came up. There may be no other verse used for more high-octane, fierce, and demanding preaching than this one. More people have been convicted of their sinful and rotten natures and encouraged toward wisdom by being reminded that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So this morning, be afraid. Be very, very afraid. If we're honest, we don't like the fear of the Lord very much. I don't. I'm not even entirely sure what it means on first glance. Am I to walk around every waking minute in fear of what God might do? Am I to have this constant reminder of God's almighty nature and his impending judgment and wrath? Certainly hope not, because if that's what it takes to receive wisdom, then it truly isn't worth it. Think about it. If I were to live in constant terror of the Lord, then I would be nearly completely debilitated. If I lived chronically afraid of the Lord reaching down and smiting me at any given moment, then I wouldn't be able to do much of anything. Wouldn't be able to make much use of this supposed beginning of wisdom. I'd likely spend all day sitting in the corner, fearfully waiting on my impending divinely sanctioned doom. Must have this wrong somewhere. Start back at the beginning. What do we fear from the Lord? What is there about the Lord that makes him worthy of fear? For starters, I think we have to deal with his power. The Lord you and I know and worship is an all-powerful God, the same God who booted Adam and Eve from Eden, who flooded the earth, who sent the plagues on Pharaoh, who led the Israelites out of the promised land, who sent Jonah into the belly of the great fish, who led Elijah in embarrassing the prophets of Baal, who allowed the Israelites to go into exile, who brought Jesus back from the dead, who sent the tongues of fire upon the apostles. We see such great power, and we fear it. Not only powerful, this God is perfect. He does no wrong, for he is the one who knows the difference, the true difference between good and evil. His expectations of his creation are not only demanding, but they are simultaneously precise and thorough. So we fear his perfection. And then we chronically fall short. So we fear that moment where his power and his perfection meet. That is to say, we fear his judgment. But the question we're all dying, quite literally dying to ask, is what about God's mercy? Isn't God not only all-powerful and perfect, but merciful? I think our gospel story might actually help us understand a little bit more the connection between fearing God and God's mercy a bit more deeply. 10 lepers come to Jesus asking to be cleansed of their dreadful, painful, and socially isolating disease. Jesus gives them a command, "Go to the priests and be washed, and you shall be cleansed." Given that Luke tells this story later in Jesus' ministry, we can assume the reason these men show up in Jesus' life in the first place is they'd heard about him. They'd heard he does things like this. He heals people. They likely suspected a similar story to others. Jesus, you come, you ask for healing, Jesus touches you, you're healed, you move on with your life. They were probably a little disappointed at this additional step, go and tell the priests. But as they obey Jesus' command, on the way to the priests, they're healed. And in the joy of their healing, 9 of the 10 go on with their lives, while one returns, grateful to the Lord. And something interesting happens to the one who returns. We need to notice the exact words of the gospel text. All 10 of the men were cleansed. But Jesus tells this 10th man, the one who came back in gratitude, that he has been made well. The older translations, this verse would reflect that the word for well is the same word for salvation. They would say that Jesus told the tenth man he had been saved. So all ten were cleansed, but only one was saved. What does this tell us about the fear of God? The story of ten men, all of whom had the opportunity to be made fully well, to be fully saved, only one of them avails themselves of this chance. And why? Because God takes our actions seriously. And only one of the men made the decision to come back seeking more than just cleansing. The proper fear of the Lord isn't worrying that he might suddenly launch an unprovoked attack upon us. But rather, the fear of the Lord is grounded in the fear that God might just take our decisions as seriously as we think we want him to. That such an attack would be hardly unprovoked. The fear of the Lord is a completely rational fear that God might give us all that we ask for when we choose to walk apart from what he has promised is best for us, when we choose to live in a way that we know will deny us our health and our flourishing. To fear God is to fear what might happen if we are like the nine men who didn't come back. To fear that we would simply come to God for what we think we need, rather than submitting our whole selves to God, seeking not only to be cleansed, but to be made well. We rightly fear that God's mercy might extend only as far as we want it to, rather than as far as we need it to. And all this because God has decided to respect our decisions as to just how far we're going to let him go in our life. So the tenth man, the one who comes back to Jesus after getting all that he thought he needed, is the man who fears God. And as a result of that fear, begins to have wisdom. The question for us, how do we be like him and not like the other nine? You can hear our children's church downstairs coming up the stairway, and I'm quite sure that this is being told to them as a story about thankfulness, and it is. But it's also about something more fundamental in how we relate to God. If we want to be wise, then we will fear God. We will fear that God will give us only what we think we want, rather than extending his mercy as far as we actually need it to go. It's something real to be afraid of. The solution, we need to be like the tenth man, who when he has gotten all that he wanted from Jesus, doesn't just go on with his life, but returns to the well, draws up another bucket, and sees what God's mercy for him might look like. A mercy available to any and all who wish to return to the well from whence we have all drunk at least once. We have to open our souls, subsequently our minds and our bodies, to a fuller submission to Jesus, who wants to ask more of us and give us more than we ever knew that we needed or even wanted. It's about developing within ourselves a fundamentally different posture towards God. We're to develop a posture of fear. Fear that we might miss out on some of what God has for us, which leads us to open ourselves more to his will of mercy, love, and salvation. What parts of your life are you not fully bringing and submitting to God? What for you are the sores that exist only on your skin, for which we all plead that God might cleanse us? And what are the sicknesses, the rottenness that exists deeper inside? The places that we need to be made well. You should fear God not getting to those places. In the name of God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.